It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 173 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because you're going to get to enjoy my great interview with Kelly Thompson. Kelly's a freelance writer living in Manhattan, and she's the author of a superhero novel called The Girl Who Would Be King that was recently optioned to become a film, and her novel Storykiller is out now, and she's got more to say about that. She's also writing IDW's Gem and the Holograms, co-writing Marvel's forthcoming Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps, and her first graphic novel, Heart in a Box, is coming from Dark Horse later this year. She's got a lot of interesting things to talk about, from women in comics to breaking into comics to what it's like to create books. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast today, Kelly Thompson, a creative person and comics on so many different levels. It's hard to keep track of it all. She's writing IDW's Gem and the Holograms right now. She has something upcoming with Marvel we'll talk a little bit about. She's also got a great Dark Horse graphic novel called Heart in a Box coming too. And not only that, she writes a column called She Has No Head. So how are you doing today, Kelly?
I'm well. Thanks, Wayne. Thanks for having me on.
It's so good to talk with you. As we were saying a little bit before we started to record, I'm always interested in women in comics and talking to women who create comics, because you have a little different perspective sometimes than the men involved with it. And I've done, as I was saying, 172 episodes, and it's so hard to get the good ladies to talk. So whenever I get a chance to do it, man, I really treasure it, so I really appreciate it.
Of course. I'll come on anytime.
Oh, I appreciate that. Now, before we get into Gem and the Holograms, which I really enjoyed, and also I got a glimpse at your upcoming graphic novel, I wanted to talk a little bit about your column, which entertains me no end, I have to say, called She Has No Head. And, of course, you know, somebody like me always wants to know, how did that happen? How in the world did you get a column on comicbookresources.com that's called She Has No Head?
Well, the way I came to be on Comics Should Be Good was, I guess I had started blogging about comics. I went to school to study comics, so I've been a fan of comics for a long time, and I graduated from SCAD what feels like a million years ago with a degree in sequential art. But comics sometimes pushes me away and sometimes draws me in, and I had recently sort of come back to comics in like 2007, 2008 in a really big way. And it got really up in my life again, as it tends to do. And blogging was kind of a thing. And I'm a writer. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll try some of this blogging. And so I was just doing some pretty basic blogging, sometimes rant filled, sometimes full of love, whatever. You know, I didn't have a big audience. And some of the things I was writing, some of it that was very opinionated, got Brian Cronin's attention over at Comics Should Be Good. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I think you should come over here and write. And it was a little bit like what you're talking about. You know, he didn't have any female voices, or not a lot of female voices, and he wanted to make sure that he was featuring more viewpoints. And thus, She Has No Head was born. The title of the column the column is generally about women in comics, as broadly or as narrowly as you'd like to define that. Mm-hmm. And the title comes from, I don't know if you remember, but there was a Cry for Justice mm-hmm. preview years and years ago that drew some ire. It would draw a lot of ire these days in the Tumblr, Twitter feed, but this was kind of before those things were around or were nearly as popular. I think it was in 2008 or 2009. And it was sort of like a bunch of male superheroes. And the way it was set up, Supergirl was in the extreme foreground and she didn't have a head. And it looked like they were all kind of staring at her. So that was sort of the impetus for the column, like this idea of like female characters especially being kind of turned into objects and like, let's talk about that stuff. Let's examine that stuff. And so that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm. So how many columns have you written so far?
Oh, God, I guess I don't know. It's up in the, I can probably tell you if I check. I mean, I've been doing it since 2009. Mm-hmm. So, gosh. Well, it was originally a weekly column every Monday. Mm-hmm. at some point my workload was so high, we switched it over to every other week. There have been a couple hiatuses. Let's see. Comics Should Be Good says I've done 188 columns.
Wow. Very good.
Yeah. A lot of things to say about women in comics, apparently.
Well, we need more of that. I'm going to be honest with you. And that's something I really want to talk with you now about is, what do you consider to be the state of women in comics these days? Is it better? Are we finally getting to the place now where it's a non-issue? Well, what's your feeling about that?
I don't think it's a non-issue. I think you have to be really diligent about these things. It's very easy to fall into the one step forward, one step back situation. Mm-hmm. But I have to be honest, I think both social media creating a better community for people who either don't have access to kind of the LCS, you know, the Wednesday ritual, mm-hmm. and or people who don't feel welcome there, combined with digital comics, which is a lot more access for a lot more people, I think has really changed the conversation a lot. I think when I started writing She Has No Head in, like, you know, 2009, around that time, I think we were kind of headed into a little bit of a dark place. Mm-hmm. Things were not looking so good for especially female characters, but creators as well. It was just not feeling very progressive. And I think social media and digital access has really helped push that in a different way. I think there is a huge interest in female characters and female creators these days. And I think we're on a really good track. I think it's a kind of loud, progressive voice that's kind of pushing change in a good way. I mean, I think a great example is, you know, Ms. Marvel as a book has hugely taken off. It's really captured readers' minds, both hardcore longtime fans and also a lot of new readers who don't typically read comics. And I think had that book debuted a few years ago, even if it had been exactly the same book, just as good, just as strong, it might have really struggled to find an audience. And instead, it's just blossoming like crazy. And, you know, same with Spider-Gwen. I think, you know, people are crazy for that book and for that character. And I mean, the costume design, which is second to none, doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. But I think a few years ago, that might have been really tough for that book. And instead, it's just really taking off. So I think we're in a really good position. But, you know, we got to keep pushing. We need more female creators, especially because characters tend to come and go, but great creators pushing forward, more diversity. These things are good for our stories, you know?
Okay, granted. What I really like is, like, for example, Hext has two lead females, one woman against another, basically, from Boom Studios. And that's a great book, which I really enjoyed, by Michael Alan Nelson. When I talk with him, I always bring up the notion of, you know, how great it is to have female characters, and his response is always, well, I don't really notice that they're women. You know, they just are. It's just who they are. It's just part of that. And I think in many levels, we're reaching a place where, particularly with men creators, it's sort of odd when you don't have a female lead involved in a story somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the default is for white men in comics. And so I think such a spotlight has been put on making sure there's more diversity that stuff is getting noticed. And I think, you know, Greg Rucka has a great quote. Greg Rucka is one of my comics gods. And, you know, he has a great quote about, I just write characters. I don't write women. I just write characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's very true of the best creators and people who write the most complex and layered characters. You know, it's kind of a famous thing with Alien. Ripley is very kind of non-gendered. It's one of our greatest female action heroines, and there's nothing particularly gendered about that role. It's just a great character. You could have cast a man and it would have worked fine. Mm-hmm. Thank God it's a woman, because it's one of our greatest roles we've got up there, and it's been going on for years and years and years, decades. But not everyone approaches things the way Greg Rucka does or is at the level where that happens. Mm-hmm. So, I think some people need a little bit of a push to get there and to understand that gender doesn't drive everything, and having diversity doesn't mean characters have to fall into these stereotypical roles and things.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I noticed when Convergence was coming out, there's a Justice League book, and it's got all women superheroes in it, which I thought, you know, that's, you know, even 5 years ago, we might not have seen that kind of thing going on. And like what you're talking about, like with the different Marvel characters and things like that, I think it's just a great thing. And the one thing I was curious to find out about your opinion, as far as, like, there's a Wonder Woman movie, and of course they just lost their director recently. We don't get many female superhero TV shows and movies, but I'm starting to feel the rumbling of that. Do you sense that coming too?
Yeah, I think it takes time for it to catch up. Hollywood has had a real problem over the years. You know, I would say 5, maybe closer to 10 years ago, we used to see this thing all the time with, you know, like Catwoman and Elektra would come out, and those are just bad movies. They're not good. And, you know, the takeaway at the time seemed to be, oh, people don't want to see women in these action, these superhero roles. Mm-hmm. And that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is, don't make bad movies. Like, you know, it's just, you would never put men in action roles or superhero roles and be like, and when they fail, go, oh, people don't want to see men in action roles anymore. Yeah. It's just like a ridiculous thing to say. So I think seeing a lot of women on the forefront of not only action movies like Katniss Everdeen in Hunger Games, mm-hmm. and Scarlett Johansson in Lucy dominating the box office, and even animated films like Frozen, where you've got two female leads, mm-hmm. and the kind of romantic thing is a subplot and not key to the kind of final developing relationships. It's about those sisters. And I think people show that, you know, you give them good stories with women in the center, they're going to respond to them the same way they do to men. They're just good characters and good films. I think superhero movies have been unfortunately really behind the curve in a way. I try to give them a break in the sense that, you know, we've only been getting this, like, you know, this kind of renaissance of superhero movies really only started with Iron Man, right? Mm-hmm. That was kind of the big changeover of like, holy crap, people love this stuff, mm-hmm, and if we do it well, they're going to come and they're going to get fanatical about it. And that's only been, gosh, what's the year on the first Iron Man? Is it 2005?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. So, you know, I try to give them some leeway in the sense that we've only been seeing this kind of renaissance of superhero movies, and then the trickle down to TV with Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, mm-hmm. Daredevil and all that stuff. We haven't been seeing it that long. Mm-hmm. That said, when you look at the parity between especially male and female, but you can also apply it out to any kind of diversity. I mean, it's so white male dominated. It's a little bit ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that is obviously driven by the comics are unbalanced in that way as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's still slowly changing. And so it's going to take movies time too. I mean, it's a little, you know, it's frustrating to me when like Ant-Man and Doctor Strange are put in front of something like Captain Marvel. That, mm-hmm. feels frustrating. I don't understand why there's not a Black Widow movie already being filmed right now or has already come out. That seems like printing money. Mm-hmm. People love that character. She's been perfectly set up. I don't understand why that stuff doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. That said, all this stuff is really, really complicated. Contracts and schedules and all of it. So you try and give everyone the benefit of the doubt and just hope that when we get there, it'll be really great.
One of the shows I'm really looking forward to come the fall is CBS is going to have Supergirl on. And it's supposed to be inside the same universe where Arrow and The Flash are. And maybe someday, should things ever work out in such a way, we might get to see those folks all cross over with each other. There's supposed to be a Hawkgirl in a team show that's going to be on the CW this fall, too. So we're starting to see cracks in the wall happen. And I couldn't be more excited. I'm so looking forward to all this good stuff.
You know, we talked years and years ago on the Three Chicks Review podcast that I do with the woman Sue who runs DC Women Kicking Ass. We talked to Marjorie Liu, and she had said that the change was kind of frustrating and it was very slow, but that, you know, we were really going to need to see something dramatic like what happened with the Hunger Games novels for YA dystopian, you know, and that blew everything wide open. And then we saw a ton of that. And I really think in comics, that's been things like Ms. Marvel and Spider-Gwen. I think seeing, you know, Hunger Games perform well in theater, plus movies like Lucy, which, you know, I don't even think it's a very good movie, but it absolutely dominated. And it dominated when other really well-established stars were in things that people recognize, like The Rock and Hercules. Wasn't that the one that she completely, Lucy just swept it at the box office? And so, you know, it takes kind of successes like that to kind of break the wall down a little faster, but I do think we're getting there. Try to be patient.
Yep. Well, that's the thing. It's happening. A hard part, you're right, is being patient and waiting for things to come into place. We know Captain Marvel's coming. We just got to hold on for it. And like with Supergirl and things like that, we've got to do our things and keep making things happen and keep supporting these kinds of things. That's the thing that that it requires so much. You know, I always like to tell the Family Guy story, that when Family Guy was canceled by Fox, they started showing it on the Cartoon Network, and the ratings were so high, they released them on DVD. And the DVD sold like crazy. And that actually prompted Fox to bring the show back. So the thing that's important for us to do is, those people of us who are interested in women in comics, we need to be supporting women in comics and doing that.
Absolutely.
So I just
and I would say not just characters as creators. You know, you mentioned Hex before, mm-hmm. and I think in the first series, that was one of Emma Rios's first gigs, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And now look at her now. I mean, it's just really great to support that kind of stuff. And you're right. I mean, look at what happened with Deadpool, right? Mm-hmm. That was like testing the waters with that fan stuff, and people were freaking out over it, and here we go. So, yeah, you know.
Now, I'd be curious to find out, because, you know, as we talk about, it's still not as many women in comics as there really ought to be. But, you know, you have accomplished a lot, you know, much along the ways of Gail Simone and other people. How did you get into comics? How did you break into stuff? How did you start to write for them? What did you have to do in order to get noticed?
Well, I don't think we can mention me in the same breath as Gail Simone, though I appreciate that. you know, I wrote a novel called The Girl Who Would Be King, which is about two female superheroes, teenage girls, who have superpowers, who are kind of fighting each other. And that has, I mean, I think comics are doing a pretty good job, especially when they're interested in diversity, of looking outside of just people who've written comics. You know, they're looking at webcomic artists like, you know, Noelle Stevenson. They're looking at, you know, Faith Erin Hicks. They're looking at a lot of people to draw them in. And I think that's been true. Marjorie Liu was a novelist before she wrote some comics. Mm-hmm. The woman writing Catwoman now, Genevieve Valentine, she's a novelist. So I think that that helped me a little bit. I'd written two novels, so I didn't look like someone who just had never written anything. Mm-hmm. And then, so I mean, I guess like anyone, I was kind of toiling away in my garage by myself, right? And no one was paying attention to me, if I'd had a garage, which I do not. And I think it's not releasing this way because graphic novels take so long, but I started really first submitting my first real pitch to kind of indie, big time indies like Dark Horse and Boom and Image and stuff. I did that in, I think, 2012. It took us about 6 months to get anyone really interested. This is Heart in a Box that's coming out. It took us about 6 months to get anyone to kind of seriously start talking with us about it. It took another 6 months to kind of get them to say yes and for us to sign the contracts. And then we worked on it for 2 years. So that we were working on for a long time, and just nobody had seen it, right? Mm-hmm. So that was in the last year, in 2014, I really started pushing on putting together pitches for companies like, here's a pitch I could send to Marvel if they would let me send a pitch. And like, I really started trying to hone those muscles. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I was pulling on connections that I had made over the last 5 or 6 years in comics, like people who thought maybe I had something to say, or who I thought might be amenable to looking at a pitch and giving me advice or something. So I started to do that kind of thing. I was doing that for about a year before I was able to really start getting pitches in front of people. I happened to be talking to IDW about some things when the GEM opportunity arose, and they kind of put my name forward as someone who might be interesting for it. Mm-hmm. And I think had I not published two novels, had I not had about 80 pages of a graphic novel that I could send them to be like, hey, look, I can do this. Mm-hmm. Trust me, you know, give me a shot. Mm-hmm. They probably would have been like, no, you're not ready. This is a pretty big relaunch. But I was very lucky that they liked what they saw in my novels. They liked what they saw in Heart in a Box, even though it hadn't been out yet. And so that kind of snowballed into getting me the GEM opportunity. And as anyone will tell you, it's like, if you're doing it right and you have a lot to say, and you're not making big mistakes, like not working hard enough or pissing people off, then, you know, hopefully good work creates more good work and opportunities. And so, you know, that's sort of what happened for me. The Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps gig that I'm co-writing with Kelly Sue DeConnick, that starts in June. I had sent a pitch you know, I had been talking to Janine Schaefer for a long time. And then finally, after months of talking to her and, you know, I was kind of figuring it out, then finally I got to sign the contract that says you can send them a pitch. Hmm. And then several months after sending that pitch, someone looked at it and thought it was good. And then before Janine Schaefer left, she passed it on to Sena Amat, which is the editor for Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. And so then when there was an opportunity for a co-writer for Kelly Sue DeConnick on this Secret Wars miniseries, you know, I was kind of in their minds. They liked what they'd seen. Mm-hmm. It didn't hurt that Sana is a fan of Gem. So she had seen what I'd done on Gem. And so there you go.
Wow. So in other words, networking. And what I always hear is if you enjoy writing, write and get your yes. product out there. It sounds like that applies not only to men, but to women as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it looks to a lot of people like I kind of popped up overnight, and I think I've been super lucky, and I'm super grateful for the opportunities I've been given, but don't kid yourself. There was years of networking and pitch writing and writing a graphic novel before I ever even came close to Marvel saying, all right, sure, send us a pitch, you know? Mm-hmm. And then timing had to be right for everything else. So it's a very delicate little thing. I mean, I think there's this perception for people, especially with Twitter, and there's such access, right, to comics creators and editors and all these people because of social media. Mm-hmm. And we're a pretty small community in a way, comics. And so it feels like it shouldn't be that hard to get in the door. And I'm sure it's much easier than a lot of other industries, but it's still, I mean, you got to do a lot of work and you got to be ready to go when someone says go. So. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you were ready, and that's great, because now we're getting to enjoy your product. And let's start talking about some of those. The first one I want to talk about, and I got a chance to read a little bit of it, was the Heart in the Box graphic novel. Do you want to give like a TV guide version of what that's about?
Sure. I have to be honest, my pitch for this is not as refined as Gem or even Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps. We worked on it for so long, and I haven't done a lot of PR yet. So I think we pitched it as like a road trip paved with heartbreak and blood, something like that.
Okay.
It's a search of self-discovery of the most brutal kind. It's basically about a character that gets her heart broken and kind of wishes it away. Mm-hmm. And makes a rather Faustian deal with a possibly nefarious person to literally take her heart away. Of course, heart as metaphor for soul. Mm-hmm. But it's more fun to have her literally have to go after pieces of a heart. So it's got metaphor and literal elements to it, you know, and all work in kind of a supernatural context. The thing that it definitely has going for it, other than the incredible Meredith McLaren artwork, which is just beautiful, is everyone's had their heart broken. Even if it's not romantic love, we've all felt that pain. And so I think it's very relatable in that way.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. The characters are very realistic. I felt about that. And I you talked about the art, and there's a one thing that happens when the change happens in the lead character. The art reflects that. And
the desaturation.
Yeah. And not only do you feel for her on an emotional level, but you can see the physical, what appears to be a physical change in her. And I really felt very sorry for her on all those levels. I really related to her quite a bit. And so to me, that was just like, wow, I got to get this graphic novel when it comes out. Man, can't wait.
Thank you. That's an idea that Meredith and I sort of had at the same time, although Meredith brought it up. And I think it's the kind of thing, because that character is then basically, for people who haven't seen it, but, you know, she loses this, basically what's her soul, right? And so she's desaturated in the world, not as people who are around her see her as black and white, but that's how we experience her because that's how she's experiencing it. Mm-hmm. And then, so as she reclaims these parts of her heart, she, like, you know, is generally going to warm back up to her base level, like how she should be. And, you know, when Meredith talked about it, I was like, honestly, I was like, I completely agree. I've thought the same thing. We should 100% do it. It's going to really give the book a whole nother level and layer. And I bet she regrets every day that she said that, because it was incredibly difficult, especially over 2 years, to kind of slowly warm a character up color-wise. It was very difficult for her. She absolutely nailed it, but I'm sure she wanted to kill me roughly 1,000 times. So.
But it's so good. I mean, when the visuals and the script worked hand in hand together. It makes the reading of such a thing like a graphic novel or a comic so rewarding and so, you lose yourself in the book. And that's what I found myself being lost with the character and what was going on because of that marriage of script and art. It's ideal. I really loved it. Do you have any idea when this graphic novel is going to come out?
Yeah, it's going to be the end of September. I think Amazon listed it as September 29th, and that should be pretty accurate.
Is that going to be in comic stores as well as at Amazon?
It will be. It good. Definitely will be.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Because we're all going to get to enjoy that at the same time. Great, great book. Can't wait to read more of it. It just a little taste of it was enough to wet my whistle, make me want more. So excellent, excellent stuff.
Thank you. Good.
Now,
not very many people have seen it yet, so that's great to hear.
I'm one of the fortunate ones then, because, boy, it's really good. Really, really, really terrific. And, of course, your other book you were mentioning about Gem and the Holograms, a lot of people may not remember that this is based on an animated series that happened back in the 80s.
It is indeed.
Did you watch that show when it came on, or did you do that in preparation for the book? How did this happen?
Both. I was a fan as a kid. I was pretty young, but I was definitely a fan. I was a big cartoon watcher. I mean, I was a big nerd even before I really knew I was a nerd, I think. And so I watched all the greatest hits that we love from the 80s. G.I. Joe, mm-hmm. Dungeons and Dragons, Thundercats, Gem. I was in for all of it. So I was a big fan back then. You know, I think that it appealed to me. You know, it was so filled with female characters. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was aware of it as mm-hmm. a kid, but mm-hmm. certainly it was part of the draw for me, even if it was unconscious or subconscious. I'm not sure which that would be. Mm-hmm. But to do the prep for the pitch, I basically power rewatched the whole series. Mm-hmm. It's 60-some episodes.
Wow.
So not recommended to do before you go to bed, by the way, because you'll just be singing the Gem theme song forever. So it's very catchy.
Yeah. Now, you start off with the first issue. Well, you bring in the pop culture references and stuff like that that are so helpful in comics. They refer to Jem's father as possibly being like an Iron Man type of character, one of the things that I really enjoyed. And I just thought it was one of the things you did, and I don't want to spoil too much from the first book, and I'll leave it up to you what kind of things we can talk about. But I really like that there's a twist. Jem as a character is not necessarily, even though she's the lead singer of the group, she's not necessarily used to being in the public and being in front. And, of course, all I can think about is Karen Carpenter when I was reading this, because she had a terrible time coming out from behind the drums. She was very comfortable behind the drums. And when the time came for her to step out from behind of that, she had a terrible time with it.
Yeah, Jerrica probably should have tried to play the drums and sing from back there. That might have worked for her a little better. I don't know.
Well, you bring technology involved with it, and there's a certain technology that Gem finds can be helpful to her. And I like the fact that she's got a group of friends, and they're very, you talk about diversity, they don't agree amongst themselves how things are supposed to move forward in the group. And I like that. I like the fact that we get to watch them discuss amongst themselves what kinds of things should be going on with the group. Where do they want to go as a musical group? It was a real an enjoyable, you know, experience to read where they were starting from and where the book was going to, it was aiming to go from there. So I thought you did a really great job of setting all that good stuff up.
Thank you so much. Just one clarification, and they're sisters.
Oh,
which
right.
They're sisters in the show, and they're sisters in the book as well. And
okay.
Some people don't realize that because of some early solicit stuff, but mm-hmm. they're definitely sisters. And so I love that they fight. I was a little worried that people would be like, oh, the holograms should never fight. And I wanted to be like, do you have any siblings? Because guess what? You fight.
Yep.
Especially
yep.
if you're in a band together and you mm-hmm. can't agree on what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. It's really a good story. It starts off really well. Now, issue two isn't far away now. We've seen issue one came out, I think it came in March, right? And now the
yeah.
second issue is about to come out. Do you know what day that's going to come out?
Yeah, it's the 29th. I think it was originally supposed to be the 22nd, but mm-hmm. it's going to be the 29th. So.
And the art is just as good in this book as it is, say, in your graphic novel. I really enjoyed the use of the business with the holograms and the technology. I thought was a nice, it was a change of pace from the Heart in the Box. But it was so well done, and this artist does a very good job of making that stuff breathe for us and helping us to relate to them as well as the technology.
Sophie is an incredible designer, and yeah, she's just incredible. And one of the things, which I'm sure you notice, is she's so good at expressions mm-hmm. and emotional work and mm-hmm. everything. I would say those are her two greatest strengths as a storyteller, are design and reworking things and making them kind of beautiful and interesting, mm-hmm. and also what she can do with expressions, which, you know, makes my job infinitely easier because I don't have to give everyone 1,000 narrative captions so that we know what they're thinking, because it's mm-hmm. clear as day what they're thinking, because she can put it all. I mean, especially the way she uses Jerrica's body language in the first issue, mm-hmm. you know, the first 3 pages are almost entirely silent, and mm-hmm. you don't need anything from me because you can read it in all of them, what's going on with them. And that's an incredible gift for artists to give a writer, and I'm incredibly lucky. So
now, is this on a miniseries, or is this an ongoing? How's this going to work for the 5th issue?
I think the answer to that is it's an ongoing, so mm-hmm. long as people are buying it.
Okay.
So the first issue did extremely well. Mm. Everyone's really happy. I believe, I'm not even sure I'm supposed to say this, but I believe the second issue has already gone to a second printing even before it's out, because there was such a great response to the first issue that all the stores upped their orders, but like the print, you know, they'd already put in the print order. So that's wonderful. Sophie will be on this first narrative arc, will be 6 issues, and mm-hmm. Sophie's with me for that. Mm-hmm. And then there will be a new artist that's not yet announced for the next arc, which will be, I believe, 5 issues, and then Sophie will come back for arc 3. And that one's especially exciting and like fun, so hopefully we're popular.
You know, it's funny you bring up something. When I got to interview Babs Tarr, who does Batgirl, and she talked about the fact that she at one point went into a comic store and asked them what they would refer her to as a comics reader, what books should she be reading? And they struggled with that. And I kind of joked with her, and I said, well, maybe now when if you were to do the same thing, you'd walk in, maybe they'd give you your book. You know, maybe Batgirl would be the one they'd give you. But it sounds like the Gem and the Holograms is something that hopefully they'll get more women fans coming into the stores as like Babs and you are doing these things, and you're telling good stories about good characters.
I mean, I hope so. You know, I like to say Gem is for everyone because it's very diverse and inclusive. And, you know, it's just kind of a fantastical story where it has all sorts of elements. You know, it's this very character-driven piece, but it has kind of glamour and music and fortune and fame. But then there's adventure and sci-fi elements. And so I think while the comic won't be as action-packed as, say, the television series was, mm-hmm. just by nature of we can't do as much in 20 pages of panel time, I do think that there's something for everyone. But mm-hmm. there's no denying that it's a book that should especially appeal towards women. It's filled wall to wall with women. In fact, and we didn't do this on purpose, but I don't think a single man has a line of dialogue or even appears except for in the background in the first issue, which again, it's not something we did deliberately. It's just when you're rebooting Gem and the Holograms, there are so many incredible original Christy Marks characters that you already want to get on the page that there's no time for some white males to be running around with dialogue.
Wow.
So I think, you know, that won't be true. In the second issue, we introduce Rio, who's a major character, so he'll have some dialogue. We'll finally get some man bits in there. you know, I also think that Gem and the Holograms have a really great foil. I'm a huge fan of superhero comics, and your heroes, which the Holograms definitely are only as good as your antagonists, as your villains, and the Misfits make for incredible antagonists. So I think in the second issue, they really turn up the stakes. You know, we've got really emotional stakes in this first issue, but they're going to make it even more intense. So I'm super excited. I hope people enjoy it.
There's a third group. Is that group going to show up occasionally in the books moving forward? Do you have any plans for them as well?
I would love to eventually do the Stingers, but again, I think just from the sheer number of characters we're dealing with, we have to take our time. Like, if we're going to bring in the Stingers as any kind of major element, something will have to fall backwards. So, you know, and that would probably be the Misfits, and we haven't even met them yet. So, you know, it'll take some time. Maybe Arc 4 will be their big debut, although I wouldn't put it past Sophie for drawing them into a panel somewhere. So keep your eyes peeled.
Well, it's a great book, and you're doing a great job with it, and I can't wait for issue number 2 to come out at the end of this month.
Thank you so much.
But I wouldn't be a good interviewer if I didn't talk with you briefly about Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps. Can you tell us just a little bit about what that is from Marvel? Of course, we know Captain Marvel by now, who she is. What's the Carol Corps? How does this all circle around Captain Marvel?
So this is for the Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. This is a mini series. So this basically just takes the place of the regular Captain Marvel book for, I guess it's June and July, because I think it doubles ships. I'm not quite clear. But so Captain Marvel will certainly be back. You know, no worries there. But this is the mini series that kind of takes the place of the regular Captain Marvel book during the Secret Wars event. So Captain Marvel, this is, you know, an alternate reality version of Carol, but she's still got her superpowers. She's still got a costume similar to the one she has now, but she's the captain of this group of pilots because the battle world that they're from is Hala Field, which is, or Hala Field. I'm not actually sure how to pronounce it. I should probably find out. And so a lot of the characters that Kelly Sue established in the first volume of Captain Marvel, the In Pursuit of Flight volume. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, Jerry and Mackie and Bee and also Helen, who was in that arc, who's a great character, Helen Cobb. Mm-hmm. So it's alternate reality versions of those women, and they make up the Banshee Squad, which is also called the Carol Corps, which of course is a reference to the incredible, super passionate fan base for the Captain Marvel character. They call it the Carol Corps. So it's got its own incontinuity reason for existing, but it's sort of a hat tip to these great fans who have been so supportive of the book. So,
well, my understanding is that the Secret Wars number one is already, they've sold, what, 550,000 copies?
Wow.
So, you know, you're on the right train on that with this, you know, being
I
able
guess
to
so.
Yeah. You're in the right place to get some good attention and get some good workout. So really looking forward to that. It's going to be great fun stuff. And this is in June, you were saying?
I know that the way the books come out is a little bit staggered, but I believe our issue one is in June, yes.
Okay.
So
something to look forward to. So, man, you've got a lot going on. It's really great. Now, if people want to follow your stuff, because we talked about you, if people want to read your column, She Has No Head, where do they go to get that?
You can find it on Comic Book Resources, and if you go to the blogs, it's Comics Should Be Good, and, you know, just search the tab, She Has No Head, or you can, like, type in the whole thing, but it's so long, forget it. You can probably just Google it. It's probably the easiest way to find it.
Well, it's great fun reading, so I've enjoyed what I've read so far. So, and then, now you said you also have a podcast, so how do people get to listen to your podcast?
It's actually also hosted on Comics Should Be Good, so if you find She Has No Head, you'll find the podcast too. It's called Three Chicks Review Comics. It's also on iTunes, and we're hosted through Podbean, so you can find it in all those places.
And I see that according to what they say in Comic Book Resources, the best way to contact you or to follow what you're doing is Twitter. Do you want to tell people how to follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter. My Twitter handle is @79semifinalist, all one word. It's sort of not the most intuitive thing, but 1979 semifinalist is a handle I've gone by for a while. It's where my website is and my Tumblr and all of that. So,
well, Kelly, you're doing great work, and boy, I can't wait to read more to your stuff. And I hope that if anybody that's listening, please be sure to take the time to get Gem and the Holograms from IDW. Look forward to Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps, and Heart in a Box is coming up from Dark Horse, hopefully later this year. And heck, you might even look up and find The Girl Who Would Be King, and also another novel, Story Killer, right?
Yeah, Story Killer is my other novel, and there will hopefully be a second volume of that coming out in late summer. I'll probably be running a Kickstarter for it sometime this summer for the second volume, so that's good. I should also say Dark Horse would probably kill me. I've got a short story in Creepy Number 20 that comes out next week, so if you like horror, there's a thing too.
Very cool. Can you give us a little teaser on that one?
Well, that's kind of like an animal-themed issue, which, as I understand it, happened sort of on accident. I mean, I just happened to pitch a story about bugs, which terrify me. So, you know, that's the best way to write horror, right? Find something that terrifies you and then put it on the page. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's, I think, Matthew Southworth did the cover, and he's got a story he wrote and drew inside. And then, you know, I haven't actually seen the issue yet, but my art is by Ramon Box, and it's absolutely incredible. So
great. Well, I also want to thank Dark Horse for helping to set up this interview too, which was much appreciated. So, boy, Kelly, you're doing great stuff, and man, I can't wait to read more of your work moving forward. So I hope that anybody who enjoys a good story and wants to enjoy more about with women in comics, boy, get right on with Kelly Thompson, because you're going to get good quality stuff all the way around, no matter what you're listening to or what you're reading. So, Kelly, keep it up, and boy, we'll look forward to more good stuff from you in the future.
Thanks so much, Wayne. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.